everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerds on Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me as always is the ever delightful, wonderful friend of mine, Jonathan Strickland.
What a twist!
What a twist. That you're wonderful and my friend?
I mean, that's just me giving some foreshadowing for one of the many stories we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
For a trailer, because that's the quote they always gave in Robot Chicken for M. Night Shyamalan, and we have a new M. Night Shyamalan movie trailer to talk about, but that's for later. That's jumping way ahead, but you know, you gotta foreshadow if you want to reveal a twist, and spoiler alert, the twist is there is no twist.
Okay. We're here.
He was dead the whole time is what I'm trying to say. He was dead the whole time.
You? M. Night Shyamalan?
No. Bruce Willis.
Oh.
Sixth Sense.
Oh, you know, I don't think I've ever watched that movie all the way through.
Oh, I think I just spoiled it for you.
I mean, I knew that.
I think it's impossible to get through, like, to be, like, alert and alive in our pop culture and not know that, unless you're just young enough where you missed that movie, right? Like maybe you were a little kid when the movie came out and you just never saw it. Then you would have, it would have passed over your head. You wouldn't know, but otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm lucky I got to see it before it got spoiled for me. Honestly, I was actually surprised in the theater. I'm not ashamed to say it, that, that twist legit took me by surprise because I did not see it coming. And I know all the clues were there and I should have known. Like friends of mine were like, oh, I knew. I'm like, good for you. I didn't.
You know, I wonder if that's the problem with like M. Night Shyamalan's general MO and why his movies have gotten less popular is because if you're always expecting a twist, like the first couple of movies, you didn't necessarily know there was a twist. And so you went in and you were surprised. And then after that, every movie of his you go to, Last Airbender aside, you go in anticipating the twist and trying to figure out what it is ahead of time. So maybe you just aren't enjoying the ride.
I'm sure that's part of it. Yeah. And like he did kind of move away from some of the more twisty stuff, although like even more recent films have had some of those. Like Old definitely has a kind of a twist. It's a reveal anyway, maybe not so much a twist as a reveal. And then, like even Split, which you could argue there was not so much as a twist as a reveal at the very end of the movie, which is when you discover, oh, this is in the Unbreakable universe, right? Like but you didn't know
you
that until
that,
the very end.
I feel like that was determined before the movie even came out.
What's
like
that?
I heard people that it was a part of the Unbreakable Glass universe.
See, when I remember that coming out, I remember that being a big surprise to folks, like literally, because it's only in the last like 30 seconds of the movie where you even get that. And so I guess some people might argue that maybe it could exist in the same universe, but then arguably so could a lot of his other movies, which don't deal with like any sort of super heroic stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
But what do I know? Like, I just know that, like, again, I didn't realize it was going to be part of the Unbreakable, which makes me want to go into Kimmy Schmidt. I was surprised when I got to the end. I actually really like that movie too. But then again, it also, you know, has one of my girlfriends in it.
Oh, which one?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Gotcha. Yeah. I saw Unbreakable and I enjoyed it at the time. You know, it was kind of, I feel like it was pre MCU.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Time is not a
flat circle.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, but I never ended up seeing Glass or Split. I kind of wanted to. They got mixed reviews, but I know the first one did too. So, and I like some movies that very like most of the population doesn't enjoy. So,
well, I would say that Split is really entertaining. And it gets very tense because, you know, you've got some great actors in that movie and that really helps the film a lot. Like the premise itself is pretty wacky and some of the character choices go real extreme, but they sell it. Like, even as you're watching it, like you might even laugh when you first encounter certain of the, I mean, you know, it's about split personality character. Like when you encounter some of those personalities, you might laugh initially because they're so over the top, but the performance is so sincere and so committed that pretty soon you're just like riveted, or at least I was. Yeah. So I really enjoy it.
James McAvoy is very good at that. So
he is phenomenal. He's very good. Yes. Almost as good as he is at the game Tequila Slaps. You'll have to look it up on YouTube to learn more about what that is. We'll talk more about M. Night a little bit later. Before we do that, though, we wanted to start off, as we have typically in recent episodes, talking about stuff that we have seen or experienced that kind of falls into the geek sphere. And Ariel, now the listeners at home can't see this, but I can. Ariel is wearing some merch from a show that she saw this week.
Yeah. The musical Six, about the six wives of Henry VIII, is at the Fox currently in Atlanta. And I saw it a couple of nights ago. My dear friends and I all bounded as different wives. And there were some other people doing that too, which was really cool. Not as many people dressed up as they did for Beetlejuice, but there were still some people. And a couple of people in like pretty accurate costume recreations too, which was amazing to see, but also like probably not comfortable to sit in in the Fox.
I was just about to ask if you went full Ren Faire for your stuff, or if you did something a little more comfortable.
We all just bounded. So if you're not familiar with bounding, it's wearing like a kind of normal-ish outfit that evokes the character. So I wore, I went as Catherine of Aragon, and she wears like a little like bikini bottom with a split peplum skirt and fishnets. And that's not really like, I don't necessarily want to have dinner downtown and then sit in a theater like that all night. So I wore like black shiny pleather leggings with a gold tank top. And then I had a black blazer over top of it that buttoned in the middle. So it still gave that kind of like V gold peplum look.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had on like a gold chain necklace and spiky hoop earrings and a spiky headband and like some gold makeup and accessories and chunky funky boots. So it was evocative of the character, but it wasn't a full on costume.
Right. Like, see, for me, I just think back. So this is narrow casting again, but at student days at the Georgia Renaissance Festival, one of the many little stage productions that we would do as an educational outreach for students, like this would be during the week as opposed to on the weekend. And we would have classes from all over the Southeast come into the Renaissance Festival, and we would do little historical presentations, one of them being the wives of Henry VIII. And so in my mind, when you said bounding, instead of bounding, I immediately just thought of all the actresses I've known who have been in that production dressed in their wives of Henry VIII costumes and thinking that, I mean, it wouldn't be torture, but it would not be comfortable.
You know, I don't think I was ever in that. I was never a wife.
Really? I thought you were Catherine Howard in at least one of them.
No. I don't believe I was.
Golly. Yeah, I was never in that either, because it was a production. It was a little show that only had a few characters in it. I did help out a couple times, kind of almost like crew. So I got to see it. But I, it was really just Henry and then the actors who were playing the various wives.
I mean, maybe I did and I'm forgetting. It might have been one of those ones where you just kind of step up and you don't really do anything. You're just there.
Well, yeah, because you would usually on student day, you would usually do a Shakespeare presentation, which was much more involved.
But one of the actresses who usually played Lady de Winter also did play, had a black and gold dress and did play, I think, one of the other wives. And so I borrowed that dress, and I don't know if I was filling in for de Winter or if I was filling in for one of the wives or it was for something else. So I could have done it. I did 11 years of RenFest. It's hard, and it was a long time ago. It's hard to remember everything.
Yeah, it all. Well, what did you think of the show?
I also have my own black and gold dress, which I also never wore as Catherine of Aragon, and I did not. I don't fit in it right now, so, but it's pretty, and I beaded the bejesus out of it. I thought it was a really good show. It it definitely benefits from seeing it in person versus watching a slime tutorial or, you know, little clips on social media or whatnot, or seeing pictures. Like the costumes just, they're made out, largely made out of like vinyl and sequins and studs and things like that. And so the way that they play with the light, the technical design in that show is amazing, and you don't appreciate it unless you see it live. Mm-hmm. But the lights also play off of each actress's costume as it's like their time to shine. So it was just really cool, and just beautiful. The singing was good. I feel really bad for the actress who played Catherine Howard because she was incredibly talented, but her monitors went out in the middle of her solo song.
Oh.
Or maybe at the beginning of her solo song. And so she couldn't hear the music to get the right note.
Oh, that's awful.
And so there were times that, like, she was consummate professional, but as she's singing, she's like playing with the AirPods in her ears, trying to get the monitors to work. And there are times where she just had to stop because she couldn't get the note. She would always stop at the same point. So it made it feel like it was purposeful, even though if you're really familiar with the song, you know that it's missing a word or two.
Yeah.
And then sadly she was a little off key, but once she got the note, she was brilliant. She sang beautifully. And at the end of the song, once her monitors were the show and the song, once her monitors were working properly, it was great. And I will say, the audience that was there was so wonderful and encouraging and screamed and cheered and clapped for her regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Howard's song is not an easy song to emote to either. So, because it kind of goes through how being a woman in the Renaissance, you don't get a lot of say over how men treat you.
Yeah. You don't have a lot of autonomy or agency.
Yeah. Yeah. And so some of her reputation might have been out of her control.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, so is it done sort of in a concert style? I've never seen Six or any of the stuff in there.
Yeah. So it is. At the start of the show, they're like, we're the six wives of Henry VIII, and you guys, we're going to have a competition. You guys are going to vote on who's the best one. And of course, that kind of, it's a story and it's an arc, how it goes. But it plays like a concert. So yeah, there's songs, and there's like an ensemble song at the beginning and end, and then each queen gets like their own solo song with backup vocals. Each queen is kind of based on a couple of different pop divas, is the wrong word, but kind of pop divas.
Sure.
So
like your Christina Aguilera's, your Britney Spears, your, you know, Shakira's.
Ariana Grande, Beyonce.
Ariana Grande, yeah.
Shakira,
you can tell from my references what era I come from. Because
yeah.
I'm not talking about Ariana Grande or anything like that.
Well, Catherine Howard is very obviously based on her because she's got like the long ponytail.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really good. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of really great banter because, you know, it's very sad and dark material if you really think about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't want to spoil anything about the show because there was definitely more plot than I anticipated, because it is basically done in everybody's on stage 90% of the time, exception of a couple of times where they go off to get props or whatever, or to fix like a costume thing. But because everybody's on stage, it's real easy for one person to sneak off if they're not featured at the moment, you know?
Yeah.
My party noticed that someone sneaked off at one point and I hadn't. So, but yeah, it's very much like Spice Girls-esque.
Mm-hmm.
The music is bopping. Everybody had great comedic timing. The costumes are amazing. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. So that, you know, so you can go into a show being like, I'm gonna like this. I'm excited to see this. I'm excited to see it with my friends, and then come out going, wow, that was even better than I anticipated. Right. So, yeah, it was very good. It was very fun. If you are not at all familiar with Six, it is also running on Broadway. So there's a touring show and a Broadway show, and they're running concurrently. Check it out somewhere if you can, if it comes to your town, or, you know, check it out on TikTok or Insta or whatever social media site you're on. It's a lot of fun. It is actually pretty accurate, and it even focuses on some of the things about the different wives that get glossed over, because it's like, oh, Anne Boleyn, she got beheaded by King Henry, you know? So it goes over some of the other facts about their life, which is really cool. So schools have even used it as an educational tool, but I will say, like, Anne Boleyn's song, there are a couple of like bad words in it, cuss words basically. Anne Boleyn's song is, there was a warning in the program that said children under 5 should leave during this song.
Would children under 5 even understand what was happening?
I don't know. There's one moment where they make a play on her losing her head.
Got it.
And there's some suggestive movements with it.
Got it. Well, one of the things I thought was interesting when I heard about Six was about how the show's goal was to tell more of the story of these women, because 99 times out of 100, when you are reading up on these people, it's always in context of them being married to Henry VIII, right? Like, there's nothing about them unless it's in connection to him.
Yeah. And that's a big part of the show.
Yeah. I think that's great to have this effort to learn more about them as people and not just as a sequence, right? But to the point where, like, I mean, they even play off the whole divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived thing, which is the way that your little mnemonic device of remembering what happened to each wife in the course of Henry VIII's life. Yeah.
My shirt has each wife's name with how they ended their relationship with King Henry underneath it in gray.
I will say that when I first looked at you wearing that shirt when we first started this call, Ariel, I didn't think it said Aragorn. I thought it said Aragorn. And I'm like, wow, she's got that's a weird Lord of the Rings t-shirt she's wearing. And then I saw Boleyn underneath. I'm like, oh, I'm stupid.
Yeah, it's Catherine of Aragorn. Why didn't we do that for a mashup this week?
Oh, well, because as it turns out, we've got way too much to talk about to also throw in a mashup. Oh, yeah, that reminds me. We do not have a mashup this week, but that doesn't mean they're gone. They will be back. Yes. We just didn't have real time to dedicate to it. We were debating for a while about what two things we would mash up, because we didn't have anything that's currently coming out that really sang to us. So that's really why. Beyond that, I also understand you decided to watch a little Amazon Prime series.
Yeah. After I was like, how, Jonathan, could you watch all of Fallout in a day? I went and watched Fallout in a weekend.
I mean, I will say it was like an 8-hour thing for me. I did watch it all in a day, but it did last all of the second half of a day.
Let me tell you, because I was watching it and I'm like, my folks like video games and they've played like Diablo and stuff like that. So they're not unaccustomed to this genre of game, right? Mm-hmm. I've probably played Fallout at some point. I don't know. But there are some really amazing animal talent in Fallout, like really great animal talent, good puppy actors. And I told my mom, I'm like, I don't know if this show would be for you, but there are some really great animal actors in it. She's like, oh yeah, I know the owner of, or I've met the owner of one of them.
The owner of Dog Meat?
I don't know if it was the owner of Dog Meat or if it was the owner of the Collie later on.
Mm.
I
don't remember a Collie. I only remember the German Shepherd Dog Meat, who's in it through the whole thing.
There was... how do I do this without spoiling? Okay. Cover your ears for 15 seconds if you haven't watched Fallout.
Oh, Coop's dog.
Yes.
Yes, Coop's dog. Okay, yeah. No. Yeah, now I know who you're talking about. Now
part
I know,
of the Joy Club. So.
It's people know that there are flashbacks in the series because that's been shown in trailers and stuff, even if you haven't seen it. So that's a dog that's in a flashback, not something that's going on concurrently with the actual events of the show. What did you think of Fallout?
I liked it. And the funny thing about that story, sorry, I never got to the punchline because I'm rambling.
Sorry.
My mom's like, oh yeah, we already watched all of it. And I'm like, what?
I've heard that a lot of folks who have never even played the games or even had heard of the games before have started to watch it because it's just one of those things that got a lot of buzz, which is cool. I wonder, like, I got a lot out of it as a big fan of the games. What was your experience?
So I really enjoyed it. I'm actually going to end up watching it again as a part of my group watch with my friends. Wasn't sure if we were going to continue group watch because of the whole Amazon party going away, but we're going to try to just do like everybody start on 3, 2, 1. Yeah. it worked pretty well last night. That's TMI. That's personal information, whatever. I really enjoyed it. I, I honestly felt like it picked up after the first two episodes. Yeah. By the end, I was all in. The first two episodes, I'm like, this is cute, but it's a little bit like too disjointed because you were following.
That's how I felt too. And I also felt like the first two episodes, I mean, there was humor in that first couple of episodes, but it didn't, like I said, it was so dark and twisted that it didn't hit me the same way humor in the games typically does. And then as the show goes on, a little bit more of the humor, as I am familiar with it in the game series, starts to come out. That doesn't make it like overall a comedy. It's, I would still say, a science fiction action series with comedic undertones, sometimes overtones, but I would call it a comedy first and foremost.
So I will say, like, after I was in the middle of the first episode and I texted you, I'm like, you weren't kidding about the violence being quite a thing. And you're like, oh, it gets even more extreme. I honestly felt the first two episodes were the worst.
Oh, I don't, maybe it's my thing with like extremities, like hands and feet, but there's some hand and foot damage that really got to me later.
Yeah, but at least one of those was in episode two.
That's true. Yeah, because that was, yes. That's that true. I don't want to spoil it either. But yes, that was very upsetting. I was like, like I'm walking gingerly around the house for the rest of the evening after seeing that.
Yeah, but you know, they did set it up for a sequel, which is really nice.
They're already greenlit. They're gonna be shooting they'll be shooting in Los Angeles because they shot the first season, like all the desert stuff, they shot that in Namibia, but they're shooting in LA for the next season because they got a big tax break deal with the state of California. So it's already been confirmed that season two is going to happen and it's going to shoot in California.
Nice. I was shaking my fist a little bit because I'm like, no, our tax deal's better, but you know, you have multiple locations for a reason, right?
I thought I saw Purnell, Ella Purnell, the actress who played Lucy. I thought I saw her in person this week.
You might have, like,
like it was wild. This young woman who looks an awful lot like Purnell was walking down. I was walking Tybalt and I was walking him from a dog park. It was first time we ever went there. I had never been to this dog park and it's like a 15, 20 minute walk from my house. So I take him there. We're the only ones there. So it was kind of the most pathetic dog park experience because Tybalt had no other dogs to play with. But then we were walking back, and as we're walking back, this young woman's passing me and I'm like, that looks just like the actress from Fallout. That's crazy.
Yeah, she does have a very distinctive look. But I mean, it could be. So like, if you watch James Gunn's social media, he's all the time like, I'm here. Now we're filming in Atlanta, but I was in Hawaii 2 hours ago. You know, obviously he may not be posting all of those things as they are exactly happening.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of times when I go on vacation, I'll post pictures that once I'm home. but, you know, she's at a caliber of acting that she could have been in Atlanta this week.
Yeah, it would have been weird. She was walking by the Pullman train yard, which has been used as a shooting location for a lot of films. But these days it's more like a events place. Like they've got the balloon museum there right now.
Which, let me tell you, I was really sad because I was like, oh, great. They're doing So You Think You Can Dance at the Pullman Yards. I'll go and watch when they're doing their live audience voting stuff, right? So you can usually either be like an extra or get tickets to it. But they've already done that. They did that earlier in the year because it's not an audience vote system this year. They're doing a much more like America's Next Top Model sort of a setup where each week is like a different challenge. So 1 week they do music videos, they dance in music videos. And 1 week they do like Broadway stuff because they're looking for somebody. When they were picking their top 10, they were looking for people who they could put into jobs tomorrow. So. Gotcha. On the one hand, it's weird and it's interesting because I'm not like I don't watch it for the drama. I just watch it for the dancing. But on the other hand, like the caliber of dancers, probably higher overall, I would say. Mm. But it just means I won't get to be in the audience. But that's fine. Future years.
Well, so you did six in Fallout. And then the only
you did
thing
something
I
equally good.
No. So I So I'm playing Stardew Valley and like other, like that's what I'm mostly doing in my off time, is because I find it very relaxing. But and my wife is out of town, so I thought, well, I'll watch something. And I pulled up Max, not knowing what was on there. I just pulled it up to see like what films have recently been added to Max. Maybe I'll check something out. And I saw that Wonka was added to Max, and I had not seen Wonka, and I was pretty sure I wasn't going to like it already, but I was like, I'm going to give it a fair shot, because Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the early 1970s Gene Wilder film, is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, Jaws is my favorite movie, but Willy Wonka is probably number two. Like, it's way up there. So it has a soft spot in my heart. I despise the Johnny Depp version. And then I thought, well, I'll give this a shot. And I watched it. And Timothée Chalamet is no Gene Wilder. I guess he's fine. I think my biggest problem with Wonka has nothing to do with the performances or even the lackluster music or the script that I didn't think was particularly good. None of that really is the biggest problem I have with it. The biggest problem I have with it is so not just unnecessary, but antithetical to the original material. Because to me, one of the big, big, big appeals of the original Willy Wonka film is that you don't know very much about Wonka at all. He's a mystery, so you don't know what to expect. And that to me is a huge part of what makes that movie work. It's kind of like how Jaws, because the shark prop wasn't working most days, they had to find clever ways to shoot around it. And it ended up making the movie way better than it would have been if you could have seen the shark the whole time. And the problem with doing a prequel is that it means you have to strip away those layers of mystery. Otherwise you have no story to tell, but then you've diffused the defining characteristic of this enigmatic character. And it's like you're committing character assassination. I would argue it's very similar to what happened with Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader in the prequels.
I kind of agree. I agree with you. I haven't watched it. I've seen bits and pieces of it, but I haven't watched it all the way through yet. And I agree with you on the antitheticalness of it. I also like the songs that I have seen. It's Timothée Chalamet's a fine singer, but they were just a little mellow. The songs are mellow. The performance is mellow. His performance of Wonka, he seemed delightfully charming and oddball, but he didn't have the right spice to his quirkiness for me.
Yeah, there's no edge to his character at all. Like, he, and part of that, you're supposed to think, oh, this is Wonka as a young man. It's before he's become cynical. It's before the real world has kind of ground down his soft edges into a sharp edge instead. And so, of course, he's not the kind of sardonic character he would turn out to be later on in life. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there was no hint of it whatsoever. Like, he's just sort of this wide-eyed, naive guy who consistently gets his butt handed to him because he just assumes the best of everybody, and the people he runs into are very much not good people. It was fun to see tons of different actors who have appeared in other stuff I've seen, where I'm like, oh, that I've seen that guy in Hyperdrive, or I've seen that actress in the completely made up Adventures of Dick Turpin, or I've seen, there's Rowan Atkinson, there's Mr. Bean or Blackadder. He definitely sounded more Blackadder, but anyway, that was fun seeing all these actors that I'm familiar with from English shows and films. I like that, but I tried going in as unbiased as I could. I still really did not like the movie, and it took me 3 sittings, I think, to watch it. I watched all of Fallout in a day. I took breaks because I would watch like 20 minutes and I'd just be like, oh, this is a slog. I'm going to take a break and have a snack, or I'm going to take Tybalt out for a walk or whatever. And like, it took me probably about 4 or 5 hours to get through a 2-hour movie.
Wow. That's That's almost as long as it took me to get through the Snyder Cut, which was that long.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, like, and no shade on anyone out there who saw the movie and loved it. I mean, if that's your thing, that's cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And there's, I'm not even saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying that, that I personally did not enjoy it and really struggled to get through it, but I was determined to see the whole thing. I wanted to kind of give it a really fair shot. And again, like, yeah. I think most of the performances in the film are good, but the movie itself, just its existence, vexes me. But then on top of that, I didn't really think the songs or script were that good. Oh, Olivia Colman, she's great in it.
Yeah. So the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare came out this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's got good reviews so far. I'm hoping to see that this weekend. We'll see if it happens.
That would be fun. Yeah. I'm curious about that one. Like, it's, I know as long as you go into it thinking, this is based on a true story in the loosest sense of the term, you're okay.
I also tried to watch Quantum Leap, but unfortunately I don't have that streaming service right now.
Yeah, that's always a struggle for me. Speaking of struggles, we have gone half an hour into this podcast just chatting about the stuff we've done this week, and we haven't even touched on 30 seconds or less. And y'all, we have more than a dozen stories in that segment this week.
Then we better stick to the 30 seconds as best as humanly possible.
All right.
And I'm going to start. So Mattel and Heinz have teamed up to make a barbecue sauce. Yeah, this is like if you want pink sauce, but actually approved by the FDA. it's I guess like a mayo barbecue mashup that gets, it's pink because of beetroot. It is like legitimately like neon pink. And they've also released it with tomato ketchup. So it's only available in the UK right now, really. But if it gets popular, they will possibly release it elsewhere. UK and Spain, but there is a potential that we will get it in the US as well. If you are not in the UK and Spain, we know we have some listeners there. So if you've tried it, let us know.
Yeah. Considering the way food is in the UK, sometimes I'm thankful that they just keep it to their borders. Okay. Hey, do you remember Sherlock? That's the series that introduced a ton of folks to Benedict Cumberbatch, then precipitating an endless series of jokes about his very English name. Anyway, it appears that the series is only mostly dead, because Mark Gatiss, who co-created the series, has expressed interest in creating a film that continues it. But how to do that with all those tricky schedules? Well, that's a mystery even Sherlock Holmes might not be able to solve.
But maybe Turing will. I don't know. same actor. So do you remember Reginald the Vampire? It's a show we talked about in 2022, which is when it came out. Apparently it is getting a season 2. A trailer just came out for it. It's coming back on May 8th. It looks pretty cute. Honestly, it's kind of if like Supernatural and Buffy met Hannah Montana, according to the trailer. So if you've liked the show, it is on my list of things to watch. If you liked it, excitement, you are finally getting that season 2.
Cool. All right. Well, get ready to hear Shadow the Hedgehog say, "Whoa." That's because Keanu Reeves, who thinks you're beautiful, by the way, will be voicing the dark counterpart to the plucky Sonic the Hedgehog in Sonic 3. Shadow is frequently a rival to Sonic in the games, but sometimes is also an ally. So if I had to guess, I'd say Shadow will start off by being an antagonist, but by the end of Sonic 3, will be running right alongside our blue hero. Taking bets.
I would not take that bet with you, because I think you're right. If you're a fan of Dimension 20 by the Dropout Crew, and we're hoping to get tickets to their Madison Square Garden show in January for Unsleeping City, unfortunately, they are currently sold out. However, not until after they opted out of platinum pricing through Ticketmaster, which made tickets go up to $2,000 a pop. However, in the future, Dropout and Dimension 20 has said that they're going to opt out of all future platinum premium pricing with Ticketmaster, because apparently that is a thing you could do that they didn't know. And as well, they are doing a lottery for people to get tickets for $35 a pop, which is much more kinder to your pocketbook. So keep an eye out for that.
Well, rough news this week for the staff at Marvel Entertainment and Marvel Studios, because both departments had layoffs affecting around 15 people in total. And this seems it to be in part due to the fact that Disney/Marvel has shifted strategies after pushing out an absolute glut of film and streaming content over the past few years. Now that they're scaling back, that is affecting the staff as well, and we just want to wish all those who have been affected by the layoffs the absolute best.
True. It's sad for me too. Okay. but much more sad for them. Live action One Punch Man is coming out. That's an awkward way to say it, but I was looking at the story and that's what came out my mouth. But it is getting new writers. So now the team that is rewriting the script for live action One Punch Man is Dan Harmon, who created Community. I guess also Rick and Morty. And then SNL writer Heather Ann Campbell, they're giving it a rework, although it sounds like the director of it, all of a sudden, Justin Lin, will still be directing it. He's the one who has done a lot of the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah. Hey, Dan Harmon, get back to the Community film. We've been waiting on that for so long. I want that movie.
All right. I like One Punch Man. Okay.
The filmmakers known as Radio Silence are prepping a sequel to their slasher comedy film Ready or Not. So if you haven't seen that movie, a character named Grace is marrying into an eccentric, wealthy family, only to find out they have this irritating habit of sacrificing innocence to the devil. Womp womp. But the ending of that film was such that a sequel actually doesn't sound like it would be that logical. But according to the filmmakers, quote, it's getting figured out, end quote.
Interesting. I think they should let it be, just like the long-lost 1970s documentary about the Beatles that Peter Jackson used clips from for his own documentary about the Beatles, Get Back. However, Peter Jackson has also been working with the director of Let It Be to restore it, and now Disney Plus, which has already released Get Back, will be releasing this original Beatles documentary on May 8th.
Nice. Quentin Tarantino planned to direct 10 films total and then retire. The Hateful Eight was, the eighth film. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was number 9, and 10 was supposed to be a film called The Movie Critic, about a 1970s cynical film critic, but now Tarantino has backed out of that project for unknown reasons. So, will he make something else? Or will he actually decide Kill Bill really counts as 2 films and he's already done?
Okay. Sweet Tooth is getting a season 3. It's its final season. They've released a teaser for it. It looks pretty. Apparently season 3 is going to be a little bit darker than the previous 2 seasons. Don't feel too sad. Jim Mickle, the showrunner, is really happy with how it's going and thinks we're going to get a really good ending to the show. Netflix's article on it, their To Doom article, says that it's kind of what he intended from the start. I don't know if that's Netflix just saying that because they canceled the show after 3 seasons or if that is, in fact, the arc that they wanted to make. Either way, season 3 looks good.
If you watch the Fallout streaming series and you pay attention, you will notice at one point a phone number pops up on screen. That phone number is 21325-VAULT. And you might wonder if that's a real phone number. It is. And you might wonder what happens if you call it. Well, you get a recording of someone screaming into the phone a lot. It's disturbing. Try it if you like. I did. Maybe you'll get a nice sweet message. I did not.
Oh, no. I'm going to pass. So Superman Day just recently happened, and along with it, James Gunn posted a picture of his Superman actor and his Superman actress. Sorry, I guess his Lois Lane actress and himself all reading comics on set, like old classic Superman comics. It's a delightful picture. I'm really enjoying this social media Superman stuff that's coming out. We'll post. It'll be in our show notes.
Speaking of Superman, once upon a time, Henry Cavill said he was committed to 7 seasons of The Witcher series, but then after season 3, he peaced out, reportedly so that he could go and not be in the next Superman movie. Now we hear tell that the series itself is preparing to peace out after the conclusion of season 5. So why did we go from 7 to 5? Is that a sign that maybe Cavill's departure left a big hole in the show? We honestly don't know the answer to that yet.
Speaking of, I don't know how to segue this. Okay, Baldur's Gate 3 is releasing a patch that's going to deal with some bugs and also give you 7 new possible endings, mainly dealing with, like, evil endings if you go that route. Also, sadly, they've said that they are not going to release DLC and aren't planning on working on a Baldur's Gate 4, any, like, big DLC or working on a Baldur's Gate 4, but they are working on 2 of their own IP, 2 games based off their own IP that they've learned a lot of lessons from Baldur's Gate to build.
Yeah. And I'm a little bummed about extensive DLC, but then at the same time, they're like saying, no, we built the game we wanted to make and we're not here just to milk you for more money. And I really respect that. So
yeah, me too.
Finally, for me, Madison, the party girl character in She-Hulk, whose name has 2 N's and a Y, but it's not what you think, has appeared in Marvel Comics for the very first time. Namely, she pops up in What If Venom number 3, sort of. In that What If, the question is, what if the symbiote bonded with someone else, like Doctor Strange? And there's a sequence in which Wong is heading off through a portal, and you see a word bubble from Madison clearly talking to Wong, and party on is all I can say.
Cute. And that is the end of our 30 seconds or less. Hey, we largely stuck to it.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Yeah, did you watch the She-Hulk series, Ariel?
I did. I thought it was cute, but I also thought that every episode ended too soon. They felt incomplete to me.
I loved the character of Madison, which is funny because that's typically the kind of character that just irritates the living heck out of me. But for some reason, it really worked in She-Hulk for me. And so when I saw that she actually makes her canonical, well, I guess not canonical because it's What If. What If is not a canonical series, but she makes her actual official comic book debut. I thought, about darn time.
she and Wong had a really good chemistry. I think if she were by herself the whole time, it would get annoying. But she was funny as a bit. But I think having him as a straight man was a really good choice.
Well, when I heard that she appeared in What If Venom number 3 and that the whole plot was that what if the symbiote had bonded with someone other than Eddie Brock, I was like, oh my gosh, are they going to tell me that the symbiote bonded with Madison? Because I can only imagine. Oh no, it's not. No, she just has almost like an off-screen cameo, at least in what I saw. So that was a little bit of a letdown, but still.
Admittedly.
If you want to talk about letdowns, though, we could really go right into our first discussion point.
Let's do it.
So, hey, you remember that series that I hate watched, the animated one?
I try not to, but you keep bringing it up.
I mean, the pain that I went through voluntarily. I mean, I'll admit it. I voluntarily watched the whole thing. We got a trailer for season 2, which we knew was already going to be a thing and everything. But now we've got the actual trailer. And the trailer is getting a lot of divisive reactions, just as the series did. Honestly, I don't think I ever saw any reviews that were really that positive for the first season of Velma. Like, I don't think I saw any, but I saw some that were kind of ho-hum. Like, they weren't super negative, but they weren't really positive either. And I saw a ton of really negative ones. So I'm not surprised that there's been a pretty like volatile reaction to season 2 because so many people just were already determined to hate it. I have to say, though, when I watched this trailer, I thought it looked like it might be at least a slight improvement over season 1.
I don't want to agree with you, but I agree with you. I'm honestly like, I also saw no good reviews about it, and I was really surprised it got a second season. I guess enough people hate watched it. Also, just comedy goes through eras. You know, for a while it was kind of like like Brooklyn Nine-Nine style zany, but sometimes slightly mean comedy. And then it was situational comedy for the longest time. So maybe this very like face value Shrek-esque comedy is coming back, which is not my favorite kind of comedy.
Yeah, it has a little bit of like meta commentary to it. Like it's got a lot of meta commentary to it, not just of the original Scooby-Doo cartoon, but just in entertainment industry in general and like pop culture and even things like gender norms and that kind of stuff all gets thrown in there. So yeah. The issue I had with the first season is that none of that seemed to be handled with any artistry or subtlety or even something like clever to say. It was all very easy, blunt jokes that appeared to be shocking just for the purposes of shocking.
That's the issue I had with it too.
Yeah. Yeah. But I understand exactly what you're saying about eras of comedy. Like I'll never forget the fact that, you know, we had the Farrelly Brothers era where you were getting things like Dumb and Dumber and, you know, There's Something About Mary and all that kind of stuff. None of that appealed to me. Mm-hmm. So there's like a whole like era of comedy where I either saw very little of it or I just didn't see it at all because it just wasn't my kind of comedy. Same with like the stoner comedy stuff, which I get as a subgenre, you know, but Pineapple Express and that kind of stuff, never got into any of those things either. So, you know, comedy is a very, very personal thing. And, you know, if for people who enjoy it, that's great. Again, like I never want to judge anyone for the stuff that they like, assuming that's not causing anyone harm anyway. If it's causing people harm, then I will judge you and I will not hold back.
I also don't get into stoner comedy. There were a couple of stoner comedies or stoner era comedies that I did enjoy for the most part until they grossed me out, but for the most part enjoyed. You know, honestly, the kind of like meta commentary, easy low-hanging fruit humor is also why I don't like Hazbin Hotel, which is a show on paper I should love. Just solely because of all of the Broadway stars that are in it. But all the jokes there also felt very like easy, low hanging, trying to shock you by just stating a thing. Like yeah, we said this, so that's funny.
I watched not the pilot episode, not the YouTube episode, but I watched the first of the official episodes after that, which threw me off anyway, because I didn't realize there had been a pilot. And, you know, the first episode picks up after the events of the pilot. And so it was treating these characters as people that you have already met. And I hadn't met any of them. So I was very confused. I too was not terribly impressed with it. I felt like you do that. A lot of the jokes being made were very lazy and shocking just for the purposes of being shocking. And like, there were characterizations that didn't make any, like, I couldn't tell what was trying to be said, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm watching this, I'm like, well, you're using extremely recognizable biblical characters, like fundamentally biblical characters. And you're completely twisting around what these characters are like based upon, compared to their traditional portrayals. And there's nothing illegitimate about that if you have something to say, but I couldn't find anything there didn't seem to be any like perspective or point or philosophy or anything behind it that I could really latch onto. So, and like full disclosure, like this show is hosted one person who grew up and embraced kind of a faith culture, and one who grew up and embraced atheism, and we both have the same reaction to the show.
I will say, like, as a person of faith, like I went into it a little bit wary, but I also like some dark humor at times, right? Like if you have to be able to like laugh at yourself. That wasn't the part that bothered me. It was legitimately like the very lazy humor. And I'm glad that people like it, because I love musical television. I love it. I'm like, I'm still salty about Gallivant going away, mm-hmm. you know? So if musical television is popular, I'm happy for it because that means we'll get more musical television. It's not as bad as Velma, but.
Kind of like how I'm still sad about Schmigadoon not coming back again.
Yeah.
Because we could have really used a big spectacle musical season of Schmigadoon. It would have been incredible.
Les Schmig.
Yeah. Things playing off of Les Mis and Phantom of the Opera and Miss Saigon and all those like huge musicals where it's so bombastic that as a teenager, I thought it was the most brilliant stuff in the world. As an adult, I find them exhausting.
You know that you're not the only person. So like Tony, my husband, when I first met him, loved Phantom of the Opera and Les Mis. And we've gone to see Les Mis together because I had never seen it outside of like the movie and listening to the soundtrack. I'd never seen it live, and I've still never seen Phantom alive. But as he's gotten older, he's like, yeah, I liked these as a kid, but looking back on them.
Yeah. It's because the old saying of in a musical, when you're feeling something too strong to say it, you sing it. And if you feel too strong to sing it, you dance. Like Les Mis takes that to such an extreme that you're just like, this does feel like it was tailor made for super hormonal teenagers who just they feel the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, and that's it. There's nothing in between. And meanwhile, as an adult, you're like, yeah, all my edges have been sanded down, and now I just kind of I feel a lot of ennui, and this musical's just not doing it for me.
You know, I'm sorry you're feeling ennui. I do too, but I think it's more I've become more present about the time that I spend and more picky about the ways that I spend it.
Sure. Yeah.
So I mean, become a connoisseur.
As we get older, we have less time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it works. Like we've got a limited amount of time and every moment we have less, and we've chosen to spend it by talking about this.
Yeah, so let's go from, we went from Velma to musicals with Velma-type humor. Let's just go to musicals. There's a new movie coming out called Thelma the Unicorn about a little pony that wants to sing, but everybody thinks that a pony singing is too plain to gain notoriety.
Yeah, I love that we go from Velma to Thelma. We're just staying in a rhyming scheme. Yeah, and so, of course, the trailer shows this, so this isn't a spoiler, but Thelma, the unicorn, the little pony ends up looking like a unicorn and then adopts this sort of glam unicorn persona in order to pursue their dream of being a pop star. And it's clearly this is meant for like families and youngins and stuff. And I put that in here because I don't normally talk about this and I don't have kids, so I don't tend to get exposed to too much of this kind of material. But I saw the trailer and I thought, well, this just plain looks adorable.
It does. It looks really cute. I don't remember the team that's working behind it.
I didn't recognize the animation style or anything. I'm sure there are recognizable voices in it too, but I didn't notice that either. I just thought, what a cute little premise. And I thought the trailer did a good job of kind of conveying it. It also felt like it has, you know, a very fun and quirky sense of humor to it. It kind of reminds me a little bit of early Pixar.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's the team that did Napoleon Dynamite.
Interesting. Like, I never would have put this together with that, because Napoleon Dynamite, I just think of it as being such a hipster kind of comedy movie where it's so disaffected and detached that it doesn't have the same kind of, you know, wide-eyed sincerity of something like Thelma the Unicorn.
Yeah. Yeah. Which has a bunch of comedians voicing the characters who tend to be kind of detached characters in their comedy, like Zach Galifianakis, Fred Armisen, Will Forte.
Oh yeah. All these guys are like known for that.
Jemaine Clement, which is awesome. It looks really cute. I will say the song that they showed in the trailer didn't grab me
Yeah.
right away, but That doesn't mean there won't be other bangers. It comes to Netflix on May 17th. So make sure to make a note if it sounds interesting to you.
Yeah, definitely. And then next up, we've got a trailer from Space, which, man, when you talk about like publicity stunts in order to promote your film, this is an odd one.
It is. It's so like, I have a hard time wrapping my brain around it.
Like, yeah, like in space, no one can hear you explode.
Did it explode?
No, but I mean, it's Transformers. There's lots of explosions in Transformers movies.
So they shot this into space and it aired from space, but we watched it here on Earth. So what was the point?
I mean, it's just a publicity stunt, but yeah. So it's like they used it. We're talking about Transformers 1 is the movie. We haven't actually named it yet, but Transformers 1, which is an animated Transformers film. It's not one of the live action Michael Bay films. And it's kind of like Transformers Babies or Transformers The Young Years or whatever. It's set when Optimus Prime and Megatron aren't even who they are in later iterations. And they're like, it made me think of those comic books that would set Superman and Lex Luthor as high school classmates. And it's because Clark Kent accidentally causes or sets into motion events that lead to Lex being in like a chemistry class accident, which is why he no longer has hair. And that ends up being the root of their animosity. That's what it was giving. It was giving me those vibes pretty strong in this trailer.
Yeah, for sure. Chris Hemsworth and Brian Tyree Henry are Optimus Prime and Megatron. I will say it looked more entertaining and funnier, though I know people don't necessarily watch Transformers for humor, to me, than most of the Transformers movies that have come out live, quote unquote, live action.
I will say the humor definitely was, I think, better, far better than the Michael Bay movies, which mostly are like the Michael Bay humor in those movies. It's mostly like essentially potty humor. Like it's really juvenile. If you watch those Transformers movies, the whole film is juvenile. I mean, not just the humor, but the fact like with the ones with Megan Fox in it, you just feel like the camera is glued to Megan Fox's body in a way that's very male gaze ish. And it frankly, like when I saw the trailer for one of those movies where it comes up behind her while she's bent over working on a car, I felt like uncomfortable because of how creepy that camera angle was. But that's how the whole thing is, like, you know, having little Transformers that are leaking oil or whatever and making potty jokes. It's just like, that's like the level of humor you get in most of those movies, and I always hated that. Whereas this one, it felt more akin to something like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like that kind of vibe and energy and humor to it.
I hope for that alone, I hope it does well.
Yeah, me too. I would love to see, I mean, it's weird to say I want to see more stuff like that for Transformers, because that's not how I associate Transformers either. I don't think of Transformers as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles-esque action comedy. I think of it as more sci-fi action, and occasionally you get some humor. I mean, I will say that Transformers the movie, the animated film from the 1980s, was where I first heard Weird Al Yankovic's Dare to Be Stupid.
Nice.
That was featured in the film. But yeah, I thought the trailer looked interesting. I don't know that I'll actually watch it, simply because I'm kind of over Transformers. To be fair, like that whole franchise started just as a way to sell toys. Like it wasn't. He-Man. I know. I feel the same way about He-Man. Oh. Like I don't feel a particular affinity for these franchises, when ultimately I know that the only reason they exist was so that they could sell toys. Like, that's why I don't feel precious about any of it. Right. Like if you want to do a version of He-Man that's dramatically different from all the other ones, when Kevin Smith was doing his, I was like, fine, that's cool. Because ultimately you got to remember that this is a series that started literally as a way to sell toys to children. So this isn't like sacred text or anything. Have fun with it.
Yeah, oh, well, He-Man fans will disagree with you, but I enjoyed the Kevin Smith version.
It's very true. He-Man fans often do disagree with me, and I just say, hey, yay.
Which, you weren't at the latest improvised D&D, but that was my my little insert into Pirates Who Don't Do Anything.
Oh, you did a What's Going On from Four Non-Blondes? Awesome.
We did that and Defying Gravity and Toss a Coin to Your Witcher.
If you don't know why I'm referencing What's Going On by Four Non-Blondes, search What's Going On He-Man on YouTube and you can thank me later.
It's ridiculous. But we'll add you know, I was going to say something and then we went off topic. It was a really good segue. It was like, we're going to add not doing this to the list of things not, Jonathan's not going to do, like not playing Hades 2 Early Access.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about this, you and I, earlier this week when you were chatting and you sent me this news item about how, so Hades is a great roguelike game that came out a few years back. And you are playing the son of Hades and you're trying to escape the underworld and you want to find your mother. You know, and the whole game is you playing through these levels over and over and over again, dying over and over again, getting better as you continue so that you can get further and further until you finally are able to find your mom. And it's a great game. If you haven't played it, I highly recommend it. The art style is incredible. Voice acting is insane. The music, phenomenal.
Do you great have to game. Be good at roguelites?
It helps. I mean, like, so you unlock weapons and stuff as you play, and you mm-hmm. can, like, you can actually start to do things like find the weapons that work best for you and kind of develop a strategy based on those. It's a bit tricky. It's challenging. I am not the best at those games, but I did finish it. So while I'm not the best at those kinds of games, it wasn't so hard that I couldn't complete it.
Nice.
But anyway, Hades 2 now is in development and they've opened it up for some technical testing. This is like even before beta testing. So it's a very limited player base that they've opened this up to. And I was telling Ariel that there's a temptation to jump on because I'm so eager to see what happens with Hades 2. But that temptation is counterbalanced with the desire to play the game in its best possible form. And I don't really want to jump in when they're still working on technical glitches, which is the whole purpose of the test. And I understand that it's an important part, but I don't want my first impression of the game to be based upon an incomplete version.
Yeah. However, if you want to, if you enjoy QA and you want to QA a game, it's a small group of players that they're going to let do it, but you should sign up to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the first Hades was that way too. Like by the time I played it, it was already out in full release, mm-hmm. but it had a beta program that people were active in for quite some time before the game went to full release. And somehow I had never even heard of it until it was released. And I think that's part of why I'm okay with waiting, because that first experience with the game was so positive that I would rather repeat that than to risk like being frustrated with it because it's literally still being developed. And I recognize the necessity for that testing. There's no shade on Hades, so to speak. But I just think that that for me to really have the best experience, I'm just going to be as patient as possible.
Well, someone else who is moving from a beta test to a full release is John M. Chu. he was the director of Crazy Rich Asians, as well as... the In the Heights movie and the Wicked movie, but now he's bringing Crazy Rich Asians to Broadway as a play. It'll be his first Broadway play.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the experience on things like Wicked kind of helped inspire that. But that's cool. Like, one, I think it's cool to see a musical that's going to feature a cast and a subject matter that doesn't often get covered on Broadway. Mm-hmm. If you do see shows, like Broadway has a very unfortunate past with shows that have to do with Asian culture. Like I mentioned earlier, Miss Saigon. Well, Miss Saigon mm-hmm. has a half Vietnamese, half French character called the Engineer. It's kind of an antagonist, sort of, in the show. And originally in the production, it was Jonathan Pryce, an English actor. You might know him as Keira Knightley's dad in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He played the part of the Engineer, which is pretty darn troubling, right? To have an English Caucasian actor playing the part of an Asian character. So to have this, and but now we're in a post-Hamilton world. I feel like Hamilton really shone a spotlight on issues in Broadway, and through its popularity proved that the issues that existed on Broadway were like just constructs that could easily be knocked down. It makes me excited to see how this turns out. I never saw the film, but it does make me curious about the musical.
That's a shame. The film is one of my, maybe my favorite modern day rom-com.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, it's never going to replace like The Court Jester, which is only vaguely a rom-com. It's more of a musical comedy with some romance.
Only vaguely modern day.
That's not at all modern day, but that's why I said modern day. It's a wonderful movie. I highly recommend it. Highly. And the really nice thing about it is the main romantic couple, neither is it at fault for the issues that they encounter in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really well done. And I hope it's got a great soundtrack too. And I hope that the stage play version includes Catherine. It probably won't include Catherine Ho unless she joins the cast, but she is a wonderful singer who did a cover of Coldplay's Yellow in Mandarin Chinese for the movie. As kind of like a tongue-in-cheek commentary on, you know, yeah. racism.
Yes.
But it's brilliant. It's brilliant, and I love it. And it was such a great addition to the movie, and I hope they put that into the stage play. But yes, I highly recommend the movie. You should watch it. It's a lot of fun. It's just, and it makes you feel good at the end of it. So,
well, that's a great recommendation. And Goodness knows, like, I am eager to seek out entertainment that leaves me feeling better than when I started watching it. Like, that's a rarity these days, because we have so many, brilliant pieces of entertainment, don't get me wrong, but harrowing entertainment where at the end of it you feel worse than you did when you started. I appreciate that. I think that it takes talent to tell a story well, but my mental health could really use some pick me ups.
yeah, for sure. Watch it. I'm this is gonna be one of the ones I remind you about.
Okay.
Something that probably won't make you feel nearly as good is the new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah, we told you we'd get there. It's 1 hour and 7 minutes later, and we're finally there.
Look, we're not even going to get to our conversation topic today. We're going to move that to another week.
Yeah, we made the call mid-episode to because we were going to talk about fake trailers, but we'll save that discussion for later, because we don't need 1 hour and 45 minute episode.
No, I actually have to get back to work at some point. So M. Night Shyamalan's, am I saying his name right?
Shyamalan.
I keep just speeding through it, hoping no one will notice.
I understand.
Because I used to say Shyamalan, and that's not right either. M. Night Shyamalan.
There you go.
Ha ha. Is coming out with a new movie called Trap. And there's a trailer for it. And I was like, okay, what is the twist in this going to be? And they show you in the trailer.
Yeah. So the trailer starts off with like a father, and he's your typical dad who tells dad jokes, trying to connect to his teenage, tween-age daughter, like she's somewhere in that area, and surprises her with tickets to go see a concert of this particular pop star that his daughter's a big fan of. And so it's a daddy-daughter trip to this concert, and she's all jazzed about it. And they go, and in the trailer, there's a moment where he says he needs to go to the restroom. So he's excusing himself. He's checking on his daughter, make sure she's going to be okay while he goes off. She's like, sure, just go ahead, go. I'll be right here. And then as he's heading out toward the lobby, he notices that there's an increased police presence and the police are putting up cameras. And he flags down a guy who's working merch at the event and asks him what's going on. And then this is where the twist is already revealed in the trailer.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, makes me less interested in seeing the movie.
Yeah, so you want to explain what the twist is or what's going on?
Oh, yeah. It's the dad goes into the bathroom and looks at a dude in his basement who's tied up, and you learn that the dad is the serial killer.
Yeah, I didn't even say about what they were looking for yet.
Oh, yeah. They were trying. So it's called Trap because they're trying to trap. My brain just automatically filled it in, Jonathan. Because they're trying to trap a serial killer who they think will be at the concert, and there's no way out of the concert. So they're going to find that person. And it turns out the dad is that person. So my assumption is the rest of the movie is him trying to avoid them and escape.
Yeah. He seems like he's not, like, he seems concerned maybe, but not like, he doesn't seem overly afraid of being caught. So it's interesting because, you know, finding out that the dad is in fact a serial killer, I guess, is what the whole twist would be. But that is the whole focus of the film, is about him apparently trying to outsmart the authorities who are there to capture him. And of course, like, you get the juxtaposition of the guy who on the outside seems like jovial dad joke kind of dad, like a little bit lame, a little behind, but he genuinely appears to love his daughter. And then you find out, oh, he's also a sicko psychopath who's kidnapping and killing people. But that also made me think of, there was a film that was done not too long ago. It was a much more low budget movie where it was, the story unfolds where it's a young boy who suspects that his dad is potentially a serial killer. And I wish I could tell you the name of it, because it was, again, one of those movies that makes you feel worse when it's over. It was not a happy story, but this film kind of reminded me of, like, if you did the big blockbuster Hollywood glossy version of that kind of film, this is what you get.
Was it The Clovehitch Killer?
Yes, it was The Clovehitch Killer.
Okay.
Yes.
Not that I just Googled it. I didn't.
It was a great job, though, Aria. Good Googling skills. Yeah. Clovehitch, by the way, man. Yeah. No, that's a compelling film to watch, and there are some intense performances in that movie.
Yeah. You know, I do like a good thriller and a good suspense movie, and Trap might be one of those. But like I mentioned earlier, I bet that if I went to see it in the theater, I would 100% the entire time be going, okay, so what is the real twist? There's going to be a twist. What is it?
Turns out the pop singer is actually the serial killer, and the whole thing leading up to that was just a red herring.
Yeah, and he's an undercover cop.
Yeah, with a difference.
with a difference.
Yeah, I thought the dad character in this trailer, like, it really appealed to me because it felt like that sort of lame dad who's trying a little too hard, but genuinely cares about his kid. So that's why I was like, wow, this could be really interesting to try and do a juxtaposition between someone who appears to be that sincere and caring while simultaneously is also, you know, like a cold-blooded killer, because you know, you don't have that many actors who could pull that kind of thing off. So it made me a little curious, but
apart, it's Josh Hartnett for anybody who's curious.
Yeah. Apart from that, it just didn't really grab me, but maybe I'll feel different. I'll probably have to wait till it comes streaming. I don't think I'm going to go to the theater to see this one.
Yeah, probably me neither. That's a good sentence. It's a good sentence I constructed there. So next, about 4 years ago, Borderlands had their players do like this mini game, this like puzzle mini game for science.
Yeah, which is true. Like, I did not know about this. It's weird because I've played the Borderlands games and I had not heard about this at all.
Yeah, yeah, but it's really cool. So they had these players play these games where they were like, I guess, comparing, mapping and comparing microbes. And they were basically like little puzzles that even their supercomputers were having a hard time figuring out. And like 4.5 million players took part and they solved a whole bunch of these problems. And because of that, we have a really good understanding of some stuff that we didn't before, like IBS.
Yeah. So this is similar in many ways to grid computing, things like SETI at home or folding at home, where you had these different projects that would make use of normal people's computers idle time. So you could sign up for like SETI at home or folding at home or whatever. And when you weren't using your computer, your computer's processing power would be used to help solve various problems in science, like how certain proteins fold and such. And that would be really helpful in the long run for learning things about chemistry and biology and that kind of stuff. In this case, instead of it using computers to actually run these processes, it's making use of players to do it like manually, but gamified in such a way that there was a reward system, like a fun experience for the players to encourage that to happen. It's such a brilliant approach to problem solving. Obviously, it's not something that you could easily port over to just anything, but the fact that they came up with this concept is incredibly clever. Yeah. And it's cool to think that while you're sitting there dreading the next Tiny Tina voice line, you could be helping science.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, hopefully it'll give us better answers to people who are suffering from things like IBS or Alzheimer's or stuff. But the really, really cool part is everybody who participated is now listed as an author among like their new paper on the scientific findings.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
Like what a great way to become a published scientist.
Yeah. Look, I was just thrilled to like, on a small scale, we did the Dr. Horrible, like, try to be listed as among the villains.
Evil League of Evil, yeah.
The Evil League of Evil. And I was thrilled for the tiny bit of, like, participation we had in that. This is 20,000 times cooler.
The fact that our characters are listed in credits in one of the Dr. Horrible things. Yeah, just like my name showed up in the credits of that one season of MST3K that was crowdfunded. So my name is on that list, but that list is like thousands of names long, where it's like four columns of names in tiny text where you're just like waiting and waiting. Like, they're not at the S's yet. I'm not gonna, it's going to be a while. So, no, that was cool. And our last story today is about a stage show called the 20-Sided Tavern, which is an officially licensed Wizard of the Coast stage show relating to Dungeons and Dragons. And essentially it's like you're going to see a group of players play through a scenario, but the audience, like, there's no fourth wall. The audience is essentially an additional element in the game and can affect the outcome of the game. They even have an app that the audience can use to help influence what happens as the game unfolds. And so no two performances are the same.
Yeah. It's kind of like a mix between Critical Role and Shoot Face Shakespeare, it sounds like, a little bit.
Yeah. So it is kind of like a real play session in that, like, they're not dressed up. The actors on stage are not dressed up as fantasy characters. They're playing a game of D&D. But they have like this big video screen in the back that is versatile and can include stuff like showing you the results of the app. Like, when people are using the app to do things like essentially kind of voting on things that happen, the screen can show you how the outcome happens before the game master incorporates that into the story. It's cool. And like the little clips I've seen look interesting and neat. Apparently they did a short run of this in Chicago before they ported the show over to New York, which is not unusual. Chicago is often a theater spot where they'll run a show before it makes a transition to, say, Broadway. But it opened this week. Actually, the day we're recording this is when they're having their first preview performance.
I'm sad that it's not in Chicago anymore because I'll be there soon.
Are you going to C2E2?
No. Am I going to C2E2, Jonathan?
I don't know.
You probably know. I don't have the right connections to go. No, I'm traveling for a family event.
Oh, okay. I was like, you might be going there to hang out with the McElroys for all I know.
Look, if that's the dream.
I met them because they came through the How Stuff Works office years and years ago because they became friends with Josh and Chuck of Stuff You Should Know. Josh and Chuck, they're the ones who have the celebrity hookups. Like John Hodgman came through, the McElroys came through. Although my boss, Connell, of course, he went to college with Bradley Cooper. They were roommates. So nice. Bradley Cooper came through, but that was not because of Josh and Chuck. That was because of Connell. So
look, technically I've met John Hodgman.
Well, technically I have too. We talked about runes.
Yeah. He was on the Joker cruise. My story is not nearly that cool. but no, they seem like nice. They seem like cool folk.
Nice boys.
Nice boys.
Yeah.
Families.
I think I can be forgiven for guessing that you were going to like a cool convention or something.
Yeah, that would be really cool. No, I'm not cool enough for C2E2.
Well, I'm so out of touch that I didn't even know that it was a thing until the McElroys mentioned it in like, you know, upcoming shows, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because I do still listen to their show. But yeah. Anyway, well, it's now going to be open in New York. I think their official opening day is in early May. So these are just sort of like preview performances for them to work out any kinks or anything. Gotcha. But yeah, if you're in New York, you can go to the 20sidedtavern.com and look at getting tickets to go see the show. I am certainly curious about it. Like Ariel and I have both seen improvised Dungeons and Dragons, which is an unofficial show, officially licensed by Wizard of the Coast. And that is a lot of fun. But in that one, the actors actually do dress up as fantasy characters. And the D&D connection is light. They'll lean on D&D a little bit, but really it's just a comedy show with a fantasy theme, a great one, but if you're there to see like a serious D&D session play out, you are going to leave disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. I am interested in it. Hopefully it'll be around for a while. Cause that way whenever the next time I go to New York is, I'll get to watch it. That is it. Like we said, no mashup this week and no conversation topic, but that's because we had a whole bunch of conversation topics we didn't plan on. Jonathan, with that being the case, do you want to tell people how to contact us or should I just
get to the nitty-gritty? I can talk about that. It's pretty simple. It's really straightforward. So you're going to roll up a character and, you're going to have to determine things like race and class and background. You're going to need to choose advantages and disadvantages. You're going to spend probably at least 50 minutes working on this. And that's before you even get to the part where you decide what this character looks like. Or maybe you start with what the character looks like and then you build from there. Either way, after about 3 hours of some serious work, you're going to have this character ready to go. And you're going to roll for initiative because our story is going to start immediately with combat. Unfortunately, your character is going to get killed in that very first encounter. And it's going to be really devastating. I mean, frustrating that you put 3 hours of work into someone and even develop somewhat of an emotional connection with this fictional character. And then immediately they are dispatched. And as you see your game master tear the character sheet in half in front of your very eyes, you will turn with tears in your eyes and you'll see me and I will say, "It's going to be okay. what's your question?
And if that's just not how you roll, then you can reach out to us on social media, on Twitter/X, where LNC_podcast, on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and Discord, where Large Nerdron Collider. You can reach out to us by email at largenerdronpod@gmail.com. All of our show notes will be up on our website, www.largenerdroncollider.com, as well as the invite to the Discord if you haven't joined yet. We've had some great fun conversations about Doctor Who and some fun memes going around recently. So thanks to everybody who's being a part of our lovely community there. And until next time, I am Ariel Nat 1 Kasten.
And I am Jonathan. I lost my saving throw on being a dork, Strickland.
No, you rolled a natural 20 on that.
The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.